Welcome to Nikosystem Episode 3. Today I'm going to be doing a review of a book that I'm very fond of. It's called Anti-Fragile, written by Nassim Taleb. I started reading it about 3 or 4 years ago, and it was just one of those books where I stopped for whatever reason, and then I picked it up, just started on the page that I was on, and 7 hours later, I was done with the book. And whenever that sort of thing happens, I will see it as a signal of absurd significance. And sometimes certain pieces of content, certain forms of information won't hit you the same way in one part of your life as they will a few years later. I think because of my experiences with business, the sorts of financial risks that I had exposed myself to more recently, the book was just a lot more relevant and interesting, and I was ready to become anti-fragile. So, this Nassim Taleb guy, he's really interesting. This anti-fragile concept, it's really, I don't know, it's broad. There's a lot that it encompasses, there's a lot that it can mean, there are a lot of ways to interpret it. But essentially, it's the opposite of fragile. Fragile things are hard things that break. They're things that are robust until they're not. And when they're not, they're really not. And they get fucked up. And Taleb's book is all about how to be the opposite of that fragile sort of state of matter, or molecular state. And what that means is that when disorder occurs, entropy occurs, quote-unquote damage occurs, the recipient of these forces actually benefits. You're anti-fragile. So when you're exposed to chaos, it makes you stronger. It makes you better. And if you don't get that exposure to chaos, that's actually what weakens you. Much like the Hydra in ancient Greek mythology. So, you know, Taleb has a lot of interesting things to say. I have a decently sized bullet point list, and I'm not really going to go into the the topics are discussed in the book, but I think you'll learn a lot anyway. I think the way I have things laid out, a lot of it will still make sense, and whatever doesn't, you'll be intrigued enough to go read the book yourself and figure things out. So one interesting thing about Taleb is the guy is obviously really, really smart, but he has this strong dislike for academia. He has this term for academics that sort of fail to engage in practical experimentation and expose themselves to what he calls skin in the game. And that term is IYI, also known as intellectual yet idiot. When I first heard this term, I think I was somewhat prone to being an intellectual yet idiot. In some ways, not in all ways, but I think I was at risk of sort of being sympathetic to the lifestyles or sort of life choices that what he calls IYIs tend to make. And the fact that he helped me avoid those decisions, I'm really thankful for that. Like, really fucking thankful. But Taleb's father was the valedictorian of his high school. He got the very highest grades in his, it was a private Jesuit school in Lebanon. Really, really, really high standards. And the interesting thing about Taleb's father is that his father discouraged Taleb from putting any actual effort into school. Now, what I mean by that is just like skating by at each step of in the sort of bureaucratic education process. So Taleb, I believe, actually has a PhD in either mathematics or economics. And he's known most readily in academia for his study of randomness, and I don't know, disorder, like the probability associated with randomness and disorder, which is a really interesting topic. But yeah, that's a good start. He was discouraged by his father to put in the extra mile in school. What his father told him was that you should do the very, very, very bare minimum to get by through each step in your education. And then all that time that you're spending not trying to get good grades, you should be obsessively reading whatever you personally find interesting and jumping between any topic and any book. And as soon as it gets boring, putting the book down, opening another one up in the middle, seeing if it sounds interesting just from the first couple paragraphs that you read. And then if it's not, fuck that book, go get another one. And he would do this as an iterative process. And, you know, this can seem sort of like neurotic or like, I don't know, twitchy to some people. But those people usually don't understand the benefits associated with trying to learn this way. You just get more faster. You are less likely to fall victim to ideas that are half-baked or ideas that sound good or sound logical but don't align with reality. That's something that Taleb focuses on a lot. He talks about how lots of intellectual types, they'll base their ideas off of their ideas, and they'll question something that's the status quo in society without really offering a fully baked alternative. And there's a lot of risk associated with doing this. You can hurt a lot of people. And I think lots of INTPs are at risk of doing this at certain moments. They're also, you know, very known for doing the opposite. They're good at questioning bad ideas and saving society. It's a double-edged sword. But I would say Socrates even is guilty you know, like breaking down a thought structure without replacing it with something that's better, and usually replacing it with something that's worse. Taleb talks about the way that you should navigate these issues. He says that you should focus on what works. You should focus on what has lasted the longest. He talks about something called the Lindy effect, which analyzes robustness or antifragility of systems. And he talks about how if something that is non-perishable, like an idea or a company or a language or a system, has existed for a certain period of time, you can assign a high probability that it will exist at least as far into the future as it has already existed. And then if your prediction turns out to be off in either direction, there's a probability you can associate with a continued percentage added on. This Lindy effect is not something I understand very well, but I recognize its utility, so I'm going to start to use it. And I think as I start to use it, I'll get a better understanding of how it really works. Why is it that this is the case? But maybe I won't learn, because there are a lot of mysteries in life. Life's far more interesting when you acknowledge that there are things that no one knows. If you pay attention to what works, and you don't get carried to hell by Socrates, you'll just learn all these interesting things about reality. You might find truths, you might find the truth, like, verifiably the truth, without understanding why the truth is the truth. And, you know, it's intellectually stimulating to find the why, but sometimes you just need to let it go and move on with your life. It really depends on what grabs your interest. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's the Lindy effect. The Lindy effect is really interesting. But you can use it to gauge how robust the system is. So, he talks about how you can use this to sort of gauge the likelihood of survival of various kinds of technology, and how if you see some new technology that is sort of very far away from nature, that it probably won't last very long, and that another technology that is very far from nature may replace it. That's a possibility. But the individual technologies that are far away from nature, they're very fragile. They're very likely to break. They're much easier to break than something that is in alignment with nature. And he talks about how it takes audacity to try to propose, for a human to propose that their solution is better than nature's solution. There usually needs to be, a risk that warrants that sort of assertion, where, it's like some cure to a rare disease, like someone is going to die unless XYZ human comes up with a solution superior to nature. Then, he talks about the risk profile of whatever you're doing. And he relates it a lot to the medical system, where if a given patient is at a much higher risk, then much higher risk treatments should be engaged in with that person, because the downside is lower. If they're more likely to die anyway, then you're adding infinity to infinity or something, or you're dividing infinity by infinity. You're engaging in weird large number operations in which the outcome is sort of emergent. That's an interesting way of thinking about things, and I think it's useful. He also relays this to the experimenters and intellectuals in the medical community, and talks about how in the past the intellectual kind of doctor and the very practical surgeon were much more separated than they are now. And he was talking about how often the intellectual doctor class, the one who postulates on, theories for various medical solutions without rigorous testing, and values sort of community approval and getting published and the status associated with being a doctor over the very cold, hard experimental results. He was talking about how the experimentalists, the pragmatists, often had the highest intellectual output, had the produced the most for their given scientific field, but they weren't acknowledged for having produced all their work until it was sort of reformulated by this more intellectual doctoral class. And those two classes have blurred now more, which is, it's hard to say if that's good or bad. But he talks about one reason why this surgical class was more effective is because what they were engaging with had more skin in the game. It was like, if they fucked up, they were going to severely hurt the person, and that would severely damage their career. Whereas if a more intellectual doctor screws up, there's this ambiguity, there's this buffer zone of intellectual sort of nebulosity as to why this treatment didn't work or why this result occurred as a result of this, complicated, sort of whimsical, convoluted chain of treatments. With surgery, you don't have that. It's like, you cut this hole in this person so you could remove this organ or reattach this organ, and it either saved their lives because they were going to die, or you killed them. And so there's this natural skin in the game with that sort of skill set. And he talks a lot about how people who have skin in the game can be trusted more. like, he relates it to something called the Hammurabi's Code, which is a code in which people are, you know, punished symmetrically. Like, whatever it is that they, whatever it is that they engage in life, whatever profession they have, whatever, you know, whatever service they're offering, if they fuck it up, it's like the way that they fucked it up has to harm them somehow. So, for example, if a carpenter or an architect or an engineer is building a building or a bridge or something, like we'll take the example of a bridge, they can't store the risk in the future of the bridge where, like, they build it in a certain way where it'll work fine in the next 10 years, but on or it'll work fine for the short term, but in the long term it'll, you know, collapse on them or something. So one solution that the people who adhered to Hammurabi's code had is that they would have the builders of these bridges live with their families under the bridges for a certain period of time, so that if there's something wrong with the bridge, the builder of the bridge will, you know, face the risk. And when you force people to have this form of skin in the game, you're basically guaranteeing, or not guaranteeing, you're increasing the likelihood of their opinions or their beliefs or their statements being accurate, because they're taking a risk. They're risking their lives. So either they're right or they die, or they lose all their credibility. There's this pressure to perform that you wouldn't otherwise get. And it also acts as sort of a evolutionary measure. Like, if someone sucks, they just get booted out of the system one way or the other. And Taleb talks about how systems or domains in which we do have this today perform really well and tend to have a higher signal-to-noise ratio. And also that, you know, it might be a good idea to try to re-implement these sorts of risk-response systems in modern society, in places where they used to be, where they aren't now, or emerging domains that don't necessarily easily map onto something in the past. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of value in that idea. One thing that sort of just raises Taleb's credibility is that Mandelbrot, the inventor, not the inventor, but someone who played a role in discovering many aspects of fractals and fractal dimensions and various aspects of fractals, how they can be mapped to, for example, the coast of Great Britain. There is a certain fractal dimension that maps to the coast of Great Britain. Mandelbrot worked on the Lindy effect a little bit, and he made some very positive comments about Taleb's specific interpretation of the Lindy effect. So, yeah, this is another point I wanted to make about skin in the game and the Hammurabi's code. Hiding behind the esoteric, that's what people like to do when they don't have skin in the game. You have every right to do it, but if you have skin in the game, you have to at least be honest with yourself. Otherwise, you have a downside. And that allows people, or motivates people, to play the game of life, or whatever subset of the game of life that they're engaging in a way that's better for society or more beneficial to society. There's going to be less malice in the world when you have that sort of risk response system implemented. When people have free options, it causes the world to warp in some ways. It just causes weird things to happen that don't make any sense. It causes people to get distracted, to not perform at their highest capabilities. It causes people to waste money. It causes the downfall of society, honestly. And it makes the world more fragile. When people don't have free options, and there's a you know, very clear consequence associated with them not performing in whatever their responsibility is. It just makes the world stronger. And it's important to have people who are doing this in ways that are somewhat overlapping. Taleb is a big fan of redundancies and the importance of redundancies to make a system anti-fragile. So the most sort of straightforward, simple application of the ideas of anti-fragile is just that in order to make a lot of money in any financial endeavor, you should make small, low-risk investments where you are likely to take a loss many, many, many times, but have it be in a domain where if an extreme event occurs, either strongly positive or strongly negative, like high or low numbers, you are positioned to benefit from that entropy. And that if you benefit from that entropy once, that it will cancel out all your losses in one clean sweep. So he talks about how rare events are likely to occur, as strange as that sounds, or extreme events are likely to occur in any system, in any domain, given enough time. It's the natural way of the world. And you can position yourself to benefit from this simply by taking small losses for a continued period of time, and then benefiting hugely, getting an enormous upside from the chaos. So I wanted to apply this to redundancies. That's a form of redundancy. And you would want to do that same thing in several systems so that you're sort of playing the same game multidimensionally. But he talks about how any risk that you have in society, in order to insure against it, you should just simply, you know, take on multiple options. And this is something that's not applied in some in many domains for really, after you read the book, it seems like apparently no reason. Like if the idea doesn't occur to you on your own, if you hear it from the book and you sort of examine the world's ignorance of the idea, it makes you scratch your head. He talks about how if you want to reduce the risk associated with various forms of pollution, yes, it's great to just reduce the amount of pollution associated with you know, the one main polluter. But actually, in the short term, perhaps even in the long term, the lower risk option is to develop 10 forms of, for example, energy production that all create different kinds of pollution in smaller amounts. And he relates this to dropping a 100-pound rock on your head, or, you know, like 101-pound rocks, for example, or 25-pound rocks. I think that would be about right. Yeah. So when you increase the surface area that way, interestingly enough, each risk that you take on just has a much weaker negative effect on you. And it allows you to train yourself and grow stronger. It gives you an opportunity to respond to this stressor and become stronger instead of just getting killed from it. When you don't expose yourself to any stressor and then an extreme event occurs, it's much more likely to kill you, to, you know, severely damage you. But when you take that small downside for a continued period of time, then you're much better prepared to take advantage of the entropy. So that's what his idea is all about. So that affects that applies in pollution, that would apply in culture, in political systems, in you know, it's sort of advocating anti-globalism in some ways, or a more stable form of globalism where each country is allowed to try different things, or you can have different zones in different countries where people are trying different things. This idea sort of supports some of China's free economic zone ideas, like where they have, you know, Shenzhen became everything that it is, one of the electronics capitals of the world, because China just decided to, you know, just lift their hands and say, do whatever the fuck. Patents? What are those? No, just copy everyone. Just make whatever you want. You know, they did that for decades, and that changed the world forever. And I think it probably made it more stable in some ways. And I think it would have been even better if a lot of other countries followed suit, but it doesn't seem like they did. And there's a lot of sort of cultural resistance to engaging in systems like that. And, you know, all the production gets concentrated in these zones that don't protect patents, and then it pisses everyone off, and whatever, people think that it reduces wealth. But I don't buy that. I think it would be better for the world if there were more experiments like the China's economic free zone, free economic zone. So what else do we have? Anti-Fragile is very honest in its acknowledgement that you never know who all the parties in the room are. This is something that I've really been grappling with lately, because I want to have a real legacy. There's a lot I think I can offer to the world, and I want to sort of do right by everyone. And I want to do that in general, but it's also relevant to point out people really don't get to they don't get this if they're not playing at a higher level. You never know who's watching you. You never, never know how some action that you're taking is going to get judged. Because there's always someone playing at a higher level that knows things that you don't, that knows people that you don't, that just knows what's going on. And if they don't like what you're doing, they can stop you. And you need this humility and this respect for nature and society and just like the sheer corridors of power that exist in the world in order to really live an effective life, to really reach your potential. And I think when you take small losses and you make distributed experiments and you try more small things in order to benefit from large upside, you insure yourself against the unexpected party in the room, and you also are more likely to make friends with the unexpected party in the room, to benefit them, to make friends, to create win-win situations. So that's definitely worth pursuing. Let's see what else there is. Oh, this is something that Taleb sort of uses as a heuristic. Taleb is really big on heuristics. I think heuristics are undervalued in many ways. I think they just get you farther. You just move way faster, and you can insure against the costs associated with heuristics in fairly straightforward ways. Really, all there is to it is you just have a large group of people engage in different heuristics and see how that goes for them. They take on some skin in the game, and they either get bitten or they get fed, they get rewarded. And you just kind of watch what happens at a global scale, and then society finds out what the truth is. Society ends up knowing better, getting common sense, quote unquote. So yeah, that's an interesting idea. I think there's a lot of value in it. I think we're getting near the end. This book is really, really good. I really highly recommend that you check it out. I think it might be, I don't know, the best or one of the best books I've ever read in my life. And I intend to read his whole 5-part series, because Anti-Fragile is, I believe, the 4th book in a 5-part series called Anti-Fragile. I'm sorry, it's called Inserto. I think it's best not to underrate the value of Nassim Taleb's work. Definitely not a good idea to do that. And that brings up another interesting point. Things that are not good ideas. One idea that Nassim is empathetic to is that you live a good life by avoiding rather than adding, that the ideal life or the ideal system or the ideal solution or the thing closest to the truth is arrived at through subtraction rather than addition. And I have sort of this visceral agreement with this idea, but I think there are a lot of ways to prove that it's the case. You can kind of just observe how things go for people when they take skin in the game, when they live life via negativa or via positiva, like by adding things or by negating things. And I think this is something Trump said, something similar actually, which, you know, whether you like him or not, he's made a lot of money in his life. There are a couple things he knows. I think it's something like, if you take care of the downside, the upside takes care of itself. So Nassim said something similar. You'll hear that from all sorts of businessmen. But I think it's really true. I think there's a lot of value in that. And there's a lot of value in it outside of business. Like, it's really just a universal thing. If you want to live a good life, if you want to do really well, it's about what you don't do, not what you do. If you avoid doing certain things, you will naturally win. And you can sort of, I mean, to some degree, it's like a framing question. You can argue that by negating certain things, it's like a double negative and you're actually adding things. But I think the degree to which that's true is not a problem. I think still the idea has value. So, for example, like, you'll win some jiu-jitsu competition by not being lazy, by not eating the wrong foods, by not eating too much, by not waking up late, by not smoking weed, or some people might claim by smoking weed, but by not engaging in things that have been shown to have been proven to have a negative effect on you, by not talking to shitheads, by not talking to idiots, by not talking to losers, by not socializing too much when you have a really tight schedule and you need to go from studying for 5 hours to doing jiu-jitsu for 2 hours or whatever it is. It's really about what you don't do. It's about what you say no to. And apparently Steve Jobs said something very similar. You know, he said that he was most proud in his career of all the things that he said no to, not all the things that he said yes to. Because there are an infinite number of things that you could do in life. And there are an infinite number of ways you can waste your time by getting caught up with bullshit. If you want to really perform, you need to expose yourself to small amounts of risk and then just say no to the things that are wrong and be able to identify them very accurately. And you do that by taking on small downsides regularly so that the chaos pays you off. That's what it's all about. So you should do everything you can to position yourself to benefit from chaos. That's what this book is about. It's about a lot of things. It's like a fractal in many ways because there are deeper layers to it at every zoom, at every level of resolution. There are emerging properties at every level of scale. That's another thing that Taleb talks about, and you'll be able to read about in the book. You know, people assume that if you just add more of X, you'll just scale Y. Like, it'll be X, you know, ZX equals Y or whatever. But that's often not the case. Often, when you scale X, Y gets fucking weird. Like, it just does weird shit. It interpolates, it oscillates, it jumps around, it ceases to be a function. And that's what you should expect rather than it just scaling. It'll scale for a while, but not forever. You're confused. You need to zoom out if you think it'll just linearly scale. That happens in a perfect mathematical realm where you're just dealing with the idea of reality and numbers and number lines and the ways that quantities interact with each other. But even there are strange emerging properties that can't be ignored. And you should expect the unexpected always. You should always expect whatever domain you're viewing. If it seems too steady, that means you should take a small downside to insure against extreme events. And then those extreme events will occur someday and you'll get a major payoff. So I hope all of this information has been useful to you. I hope it's enticed you to read the book, because I am telling you, this book is fucking amazing. And there's so much that I haven't covered. And I hope you buy a copy. I hope you talk about Nassim Taleb. I hope you evangelize his ideas, because the more people that know about anti-fragility, the more anti-fragile the world becomes. And that's better for all of us. So thank you very much. I'm going to sign out here. This has been the first podcast back on Nicosystem. I'm really excited. I'm thinking that I'm going to commit to doing this once a week. And that'll be sort of a via negativa commitment, I think. It'll be don't miss a week of podcasting. It's unacceptable. It's not allowed. You have to discipline yourself in that way. And I'm going to take the small downside associated with each episode of the podcast, that it might be a waste of my time in the short term, or, you know, no one will watch it. It won't serve a purpose. You know, I might be worried about that, but if I really stick with it, you know, entropy will occur. Something I say will go viral, and then all the downside will get paid the fuck off. So nothing to worry about. Just gonna keep at it. And I suggest you do the same. Cheers.